It's time for the Rink Rats. With your hosts, Ryan the Hockey Guy Wallace and Jesse Granger.
Rink Rats, Ryan the Hockey Guy, the Athletic, Jesse Granger. God, it's been a long time.
It has. It's not easy to get in here when I'm on the road all the time.
Is it, whose fault is it more often than not? Is it mine or yours?
Probably mine.
I mean, it's for sure yours.
You've had your fair share of fault in this. But if we're going by percentages, I'm definitely probably more than 50% because when I'm on the road, I mean, we've kind of talked about having me call in, but it's just not the same if you're not here to argue with me.
Yeah, and to be honest with you, like I've thought, or you and I have kind of played around with the idea of having guest hosts come in here and kind of fill your void, but the only guy I can really think of is Tyler Bischoff. And if you've ever listened to me on Technically Correct, we wouldn't talk about hockey.
Yeah, he refuses to talk about hockey, so good luck.
I was actually on his show today, and for all the people that give me shit about how much shit I talk about you, I think you should shout me out.
You did step up and say that you're on my side on a very controversial topic. Trust me, go in my Twitter responses and you'll see how controversial it is. You know those Twitter accounts that are like old takes exposed or whatever, and they go around and they find tweets that people made and like, I don't know, say somebody said like, oh, Connor McDavid's going to be a bust. They'll find that tweet, retweet it like 5 years later, and they look like an idiot.
Mm-hmm.
People were already tagging my tweet from last night. They were already sending my tweet to those types of Twitter handles, trying to have them expose me for saying Marc-Andre Fleury should not have been in net.
All right, so let's kind of go through this a little bit more. We'll unpack it as much as we possibly can. Don't have anybody better on the show to unpack a goalie issue than a goalie in Jesse Granger. Marc-Andre Fleury started his 10th consecutive game last night, and it's the second set of back-to-back games in that span of 10 straight games for Marc-Andre Fleury. Did he look good last night? Absolutely. Yeah, he looked great. He looked fine. There were big moments in the second period where Marc-Andre Fleury had to come out and really save the Golden Knights. I'm talking specifically about the Radulov shot on the one-timer that was just a fantastic save. I'm talking about the Sagan breakaway in the second period. Those are big moments, big saves by Marc-Andre Fleury. But 10 games in a row, he's on pace to start 72 games. 72 games. I don't care who you are. I don't care how long you've been in this game. You cannot put a goalie, you cannot put that high of a workload on a goalie right now and expect them to continue to get better or to peak by the time the playoffs roll around.
We've seen it with literally every single circumstance. Like, this isn't, 75% of the time, if you give them too much work, they falter in the playoffs. It's like 100% of the time. Carey Price is younger than Marc-Andre Fleury. He's better than Marc-Andre Fleury. He's more consistent than Marc-Andre Fleury. He can't do it. Every time the Canadiens have leaned on him and they've had a team actually good enough to get to the playoffs, he plays awful in the playoffs because he's completely exhausted by the time he gets here. Another one, Sergei Bobrovsky. Again, mm-hmm. Younger than Fleury.
Yep.
Better than Fleury. He carries Columbus all season long. They put all the weight on his shoulders because they don't trust their backup and because he's so good that they just say, screw it, he's going to play 70. They get to the playoffs, and his stats in the playoffs are abysmal, and it's because he's exhausted and he's not at his peak performance. And you can get away with not being at your peak performance sometimes in the regular season. In the playoffs, you can't. And these goalies can't play to their best of their ability because they're exhausted, and the Golden Knights will do that to Fleury if they continue playing him like this.
And I think the greatest thing about it, too, is we saw it last year with Andrei Vasilevskiy. I mean, there were stories toward the end of the season about how tired Vasilevskiy was. He was struggling down the stretch. He was able to get through two rounds of the playoffs, but was exposed.
But he got through those rounds because the Lightning were scoring. He didn't carry him through.
No,
he didn't play well. And he's 23.
I know, 23. And
he was 11 years younger than Marc-Andre Fleury.
And he came out and said, I'm tired. I'm exhausted.
Connor Hellebuck, same thing. 24, 25-year-old kid, got tired at the end of the season because they played him too much in Winnipeg.
So, what are the stats on how many games Stanley Cup goalies traditionally play.
Yeah, so I tweeted this out before the game just because I knew if I tweeted that Fleury shouldn't play, people would hate me, and they did hate me. So I had to have something to at least back it up. So he's on pace to play 72 games. No goalie in the salary cap era has ever played 70 games and won a Stanley Cup. Zero.
Wow.
In fact, only two Stanley Cup winning goalies have ever played more than 60 games. So Fleury's on pace to play 72. There have only been two goalies in the history of the salary cap era to win a Stanley Cup after playing 60 games. Now, one of those times it was Marc-Andre Fleury, but that was when Marc-Andre Fleury was 11, 12 years younger than he is right now.
That was 09?
Yes.
Okay.
The average games played for cup-winning goalies, and this is, to me, of all these stats, this is the craziest one.
Okay.
The average games played for cup-winning goalies in the salary cap era is 49.
Wait a minute. So what you're telling me is it's better to play your goalie more in the playoffs when he's fresher than it is to run him into the ground in November and December only to have him fizzle out in a blaze of glory in the playoffs.
Goaltending takes so much exertion and you're out there on the ice the entire time. If you're just a half second slow getting across on that push, if your leg doesn't quite have that normal energy that it normally does and you're pushing across and you're only a half second behind, that's the difference between saves and goals. And these guys get to the playoffs. I really do think the NHL is in, I don't know, 10 years in the future, there will be no goalies starting 60 games. None. Zero. It's almost like in the NFL, for the longest time, every team has one running back. You run your running back 30 times a game. That's how it works. Mm-hmm. Nowadays, almost no teams do that. You've got four running backs. Each of them carry it 15 times. I think the NHL is going to go in that direction where goalies play. You'll play 50. He'll play 30.
Well, that brings up an interesting question because I said it on the post-game show after the LA game. If this organization doesn't believe in Malcolm Subban, and I'm not saying that they don't. All I'm saying is...
I am saying that they don't.
Okay, you can say that they don't. That's fine. But my point is this. Why is he here? Why is Malcolm Subban a member of the active roster if when you, air quotes, need points, you need points... As if, like, you didn't need points when you started Malcolm Subban in the four games that he started. As if you don't need points all the time to try to get a better, just to improve your record. Like, every single game you need points.
Everyone needs points.
So, if you can't put Malcolm Subban into a game because you, quote, need points, why is he here?
I couldn't agree more. And also, not only that, but do you not think you're going to need points later in the season? Because Gallant, I asked him about it after the game, and he told me, essentially, we know we're not going to play Fleury 75 games. Okay, so if you're not going to, then when are you going to give him a rest? Are you going to give him a rest in the final month of the season when you're fighting for your life? Because this team is not running away with a playoff spot like they did last year. They are going, every game down the stretch is going to be life or death. It's the playoffs start in March for this team.
I would argue they started right now. I mean, they're winning games. Like, this team is finally starting to put together win streaks. They're winning games, and there's no separation whatsoever.
But this is the time of the year that you should be playing your backup goalie more than normal.
Completely agree.
So that you can play him less than normal in the last couple months. Like they did last season, they played the crap out of Fleury down the stretch, but he was fresh because he missed 2 months. So this is the time of the season where every team in the league, look around the league, they're all playing their backup goalies, except for the Golden Knights. And like you said, to get back to your point, if you're afraid to play Malcolm Subban, you need to get someone who you're not afraid to play. You have to play your backup goalie. If you don't think Malcolm Subban's good enough, the answer is not, okay, well, Fleury will just play them all. You're an idiot if you think that's the answer.
No, I agree.
The answer, if you don't think, like, I personally think Subban is good enough, but let's just argue Subban's not good enough. You can't play him. It's a loss if you play him.
Okay.
You have to cut him, and you have to sign someone or trade for someone that is good enough to play because you cannot play Marc-Andre Fleury 82 games.
No, I agree with you 100%. And if you took on this project in Malcolm Subban last year, which it was a project, right? You take him on, and you understand you've got to play him. And if he's not what you anticipated him being last year, if his game hasn't grown enough, if you have no confidence in his ability to win you a game, then I don't understand why he's on the roster. And I don't believe that. I think Malcolm Subban is a good quality backup goalie. I would argue that the teams he had to go in and play against were significantly better than you would expect a backup goaltender to have to come in and play, especially on the road, especially in tough spots, especially on the second end of back-to-backs. I mean, everything was going in the direction of Malcolm Subban not getting a lot of support, not getting a lot of help in getting wins. And I don't think he's been the issue in the games that the Golden Knights have lost with him in net.
He absolutely hasn't been the issue. He's also played, like, his four games have been four of maybe the top five toughest games of the entire season.
Oh, 100%.
He played in Nashville.
Yep.
Which is one of, if not the hardest rinks in the arena to play in.
Mm-hmm.
He played in Boston.
Yep.
Who's playing really well right now. He played in Pittsburgh.
Yep.
Another tough one.
Right.
And then in Calgary, which is in first place in the entire Western Conference.
Right.
That's the games he's had. He hasn't had a home game. He hasn't had any support from his defense. This team has played like trash on the road. Fleury has saved their asses a few times, but they've played like trash on the road. In all four of his starts, the defense was just abysmal. Could not have played worse.
Yeah.
And he made some good saves, tried to keep him in the game. He let in a few soft ones after the game was 5-0 in Calgary. But I think Subban's been good. The point is, I think Subban's good. If they want to argue he's not good enough, that's fine. Okay, if you want to argue Subban sucks, go for it. He needs to be moved then.
I agree. 100%. And it's like, you're just going to run Marc-Andre Fleury into the ground. You're killing Malcolm Subban's confidence by not putting him in. I mean,
100%.
He knows that there's zero confidence.
Yeah.
Because if there was any confidence, he'd be starting some games, especially these back-to-backs. Like, the fact that that you're looking at the schedule with Marc-Andre Fleury and you're going, well, we played at 1 o'clock on this day, and then the next start isn't until tomorrow at 6 p.m., so there's extra recovery and extra rest, and we can explain it away. I mean, it's bullshit.
That's another one that I just want to call out as, like you said, complete bullshit, because there are look around the league. Look, if all you watch is the Vegas Golden Knights and you watch no other hockey, I could see you buying that excuse. But if you watch hockey, look around the league and see that other teams are playing their backup goalies in non-back-to-back situations.
Oh, yeah.
They're playing their backup goalies in games where it's not two consecutive games in a row. They're just playing them because that's how you keep your starting goalie fresh. So the whole excuse of, well, it's not 12 hours between games. It's actually 16 hours. And that 4 hours is the difference. That's bullshit. Come on. Other teams are playing their backup goalies when they don't even have to. They're just doing it because that's the smart way to go through a season to keep your goalie fresh. The Golden Knights clearly have no confidence in Malcolm Subban. It's ridiculous.
So the big question for me is, how much longer is Malcolm Subban on this roster?
So the other thing that I keep seeing on Twitter, and I swear to God I've explained it 40 times.
Wait a minute. Are you talking about Dansk?
No.
Oh, jeez.
No, I'm talking about, well, Dansk probably has to do with this, but a lot of people are saying, well, if Subban needs games, send him to Chicago. The issue is, that's not an option. People don't understand that you can't send Malcolm Subban to Chicago. It can't be done. Malcolm Subban can't play for the Chicago Wolves. Why? Because he has to go through waivers, and he won't make it through waivers because he's better than other goalies on other teams, and people just don't understand.
Wait a minute.
It's infuriating.
Malcolm Subban hasn't won a game this year. He's only played four. He's got a 4.05 goals against average. How are you telling me that he is better than other backup goalies that have played and have won games? Is it because their organizations play them in advantageous spots? Are you telling me that Malcolm Subban has been set up for failure?
Yes. All these people out there that think Subban clears waivers and gets it to Chicago, you're in for a very rude awakening if they ever waive him. If they waive Malcolm Subban, he's gone. There's negative 27% chance Malcolm Subban makes it through waivers.
What's got the better odds? Marc-Andre Fleury collapsing in the playoffs or Malcolm Subban clearing waivers?
Fleury collapsing in the playoffs because Subban's not clearing waivers. I had to do that in my head. That was a crazy question. Anyways, there's no way he's clearing waivers because there are teams out there that have really, really messed up goalie situations. Pittsburgh Penguins are a great example. Matt Murray can't stop a beach ball right now.
Could you imagine?
Then they put in Casey DeSmith.
Yeah.
And he's a disaster.
He's not even a real person.
Yeah, no. I'm not sure if Casey DeSmith's a real person. No, but there are so many teams out there. And, like, I'm using the Penguins as an example because they're, like, on national TV every night and their team is stacked and they lose because they can't get any quality goaltending. But there are at least seven or eight teams out there whose goaltending depth chart is an absolute wreck, and they would love a former first-round pick that showed a ton of potential last year. Look at Subban's stats last year. He was good.
It wasn't good enough.
And I guarantee he gets picked up if they try to waive him. So
Chicago would take him in a minute.
Yeah, that's another team. The Blackhawks. Crawford, struggling.
Cam Ward is an NHL goalie.
156 years old.
Yeah, I mean, there are teams out there that would absolutely take Malcolm Subban in a minute, and that's the thing. You have to put him through waivers, and he's not going to clear.
And that's the funny thing is, like, so like we were saying, so if you don't trust Malcolm Subban, you need to get someone you do trust.
Mm-hmm.
Who the hell are they going to get that they trust more than Malcolm Subban? I just told you there's no goalies available. So either you're calling someone up from the AHL, which right now, if they were to call someone up from the AHL, it's not Oscar Dansk.
No.
It's Max Lagasse. He's the starter down there. He's playing more. He's playing better than Dansk.
We've seen that before.
Yeah.
Though. That's the problem.
And he was the worst goalie in the NHL last year.
Statistically.
Yeah, statistically
just
the worst goalie in the entire NHL. So that's not an option. You don't have AHL goalies to call up. They're not playing any better than Subban is, and they're playing against AHL competition. So then the other option is there are no free agents, clearly.
You make a trade.
So are you really going to trade assets to bring in a backup goalie, though, that you're not going to play because they want to play Fleury as much as they can? So the real answer is play Malcolm Subban. Just do it.
That's radical.
Just play him.
No way.
It's ridiculous. This team. Look, everyone that's out there listening, you, everyone, I love Dave Pryor. I love Dave Pryor.
Hold on. How much
this is 100% his decision, and it's the wrong decision in my opinion.
But how much of his decision is being swayed by Marc-Andre Fleury lobbying for games?
Oh, I'm sure. I mean, like, I talked to Fleury after the game last night, and I was like, "Who makes the decision?" He's like, "Not me, but they ask me," and like he's always going to say, "I want to play."
Well, sure, and it was interesting. I was talking to Bischoff this morning, and he brought up the fact that Marc-Andre Fleury played last night and he played in L.A. and the games prior to last night's game, he wasn't very good. His save percentage was sub-900. He was allowing about 3.2, 3.3 goals per game in that stretch. So the argument that Marc-Andre Fleury is just simply playing fantastic is not necessarily an accurate one. That all being said, you have to wonder if Marc-Andre Fleury playing last night was more a response to how he played in LA, right? Like, he goes out there. He allows five goals to the worst offense in the NHL. Not a ton of them were his fault.
He let in a couple soft ones.
There were a couple soft ones that you would expect a goalie the caliber of Marc-Andre Fleury to make the save. So how much of the start against Dallas was, well, gotta let Marc-Andre Fleury get his confidence back, gotta let him go out there and make amends for that albatross of a game against LA?
Yeah, so that's... If I'm Marc-Andre Fleury, that's 100% the way I'm viewing it.
Mm-hmm.
If I'm Fleury, I'm like, no, I want to play because I need to get that out of my – I need to flush that game out of my system. I need to get my confidence back, like you said. Of course he does because he's an NHL player. He's competitive. He is top 10 all-time in wins for a reason because he wants to be the best. That's why there are coaches there who are paid to make those decisions for him. Perfect example. Dustin Byfuglien gets the absolute hell knocked out of him. He doesn't even know what his name is the other night. They had to help him onto the bench.
Yep.
Now, yes, Dustin Byfuglien. Do you want to play?
Mm-hmm.
Of course he wants to play. He doesn't care if his brain's in four pieces. Yeah, I want to play. That's why there are coaches and there are doctors who make that decision for you. And Dave Pryor and Gerard Gallant and probably to some extent George McPhee, their job is to save Fleury from himself because Fleury would play all 82 games. Of course he would. Yeah. I want a goalie that wants to play 82 games. Can you imagine if Fleury's like, yeah, I think I only want to play like 40 games this year. Can like Subban play half of them for me? That would be awful.
Can we do 50-32?
I want Fleury to want to play 82 games, but you need people above him that are looking at this more analytically and thinking about the long term. Not because Fleury is allowed to think, oh, I want to make up for that game. Dave Pryor shouldn't be thinking, ooh, he needs to make up for that game. He needs to be thinking, in April, we need this guy to be a, the only way the Golden Knights win the Stanley Cup. The only way the Golden Knights win the Stanley Cup, which is the goal this right. Is it not? Is
that I mean, not it's got to be, right? You come within 3 wins of it last season. It's got to be the goal.
So the goal is clearly to win the Stanley Cup. That's the only reason you're playing this season is to win the Stanley Cup.
Sure.
The only way that happens is if Fleury is elite in the playoffs.
Sure.
And the only way for him to be elite in the playoffs is to not play 75 games.
Yeah, I mean, we saw him be elite through 3 rounds of the playoffs last year.
Yeah, and that's because he took 2 months off. Not by choice, mm-hmm. but by happenstance.
So Nick Craig on Twitter asked us, number of games Subban will actually play this year?
4. No. I'm convinced they'll never play him again at this point.
Okay, let's look at the upcoming road trip. You've got games against the Islanders, the Devils, the Rangers, and then Columbus.
And Rangers-Columbus is back-to-back, correct?
And that is a 10 a.m. start time locally against the Rangers, and then it's, I believe, a 4 o'clock start time locally against the Columbus Blue Jackets. So it's another one of those back-to-backs where you've got an early afternoon game, and then you've got a later evening game.
Same time zone.
Which is the extra recovery that is needed, apparently, to start back-to-backs on 3 consecutive bases. So if Marc-Andre Fleury plays every single game of this road trip, it'll be the 3rd set of back-to-backs, and his 14th straight start, I believe, in 3.5 weeks. What are the odds he does that?
I'd say pretty good right now.
Like 100%?
100%? No. But I'd
95%?
Say, like, okay, in normal circumstances, if this whole debacle of the last 2 back-to-backs hadn't happened, I would say there's 0% chance Fleury plays that. But after what we just saw, I'd say, I don't know, 75% chance. I don't think they're going to play Subban because I don't think they want to play Subban.
I think he plays every single game of this road trip.
If he does, oh my God.
And then, like, I don't know. I was actually looking at the schedule last week when Frank and I were kind of sitting back looking at the schedule. It's like, when is Malcolm Subban going to play? And I looked at the 2 back-to-backs this month, and I'm like, you know what? I don't think he does. I don't think he plays at all in December.
Can you imagine being a 24-year-old goalie that's trying to figure out the NHL and not playing for an entire month?
I asked Malcolm what he's doing to try to keep himself sharp because we had him on the show. It was kind of an impromptu thing. He came on for about 6-7 minutes. He was fantastic, by the way. But I asked Malcolm, like, how can you stay sharp not playing? Like, there's no way you can simulate a game. He's like, well, it's a little bit easier as a goalie to simulate game situations than it is for a skater. And I understand that. Like at a baseline level, that makes 100% sense. But you still don't have guys going 100% in practice. You still don't get to see the types of shots, the velocity
of
shots.
Traffic.
And you don't get to replicate that traffic. I don't care how many times you throw a ton of bodies in front of you. It's just not the same as making those reads. And you're making reads off of guys that you see every single day. You're not making reads off of different players. You're not making reads through traffic in different scenarios that are coming up and different ways that the pucks are coming off the boards and angles and stuff like that. I'm sorry. You're just not getting enough reps to improve. Malcolm Subban hasn't improved because he hasn't played enough.
Yeah, so if I'm like trying to take a real, like an actual guess at how many games Subban plays. Okay, so Fleury's on pace to play 72.
I'm gonna say
Fleury plays 65.
65 games.
Which would give Subban, what, 17?
Something like that. I'm not good at math. Yes, 17.
17 games. And you know what? I'm going 15. I think Subban plays 15 games. So 67 for Marc-Andre Fleury, which is way too many in my opinion. But
I think he's going to play 72.
That's insanity.
And
let me clarify because people are also jumping on me on Twitter. I'm not saying Fleury's going to be tired during this road trip and he's going to play poorly on this road trip.
I'm glad you're bringing this up.
To me, that's the biggest misconception because I got a lot last night after the game of, see, you were wrong. Fleury played well. That's not what I'm talking about. I don't think he's tired now. Fleury's perfectly fine now. It's April when he's going to be tired. That's when this is going to have the effect. April and May and hopefully, if you're the Golden Knights, the beginning of June. That's when it has an effect, not right now. So I think Fleury can play the next 20 games and be fine at that 20-game mark. He's not going to be tired. But that wears on you throughout the season. So, yeah, so anyway, so that's my piece.
So what you're saying is just because he had a good game last night doesn't mean that these questions are completely answered, right? Like, yeah. I mean, if Marc-Andre Fleury is a mess in late March, early April, going into the playoffs, you can't just explain it away. Like, you can't just be like, oh, well, he's, I don't know what's happening. He's just not seeing the puck the same way. He just doesn't have it right now. Like, it's not that. It's go back to November, go back to December, take a look at the workload, take exactly. a look at the lack of rest, and then once you see a goalie that is struggling to be a 9-10 save percentage guy and you're seeing a goalie that is allowing an extra goal per game, it's because he's tired.
Yeah. That's what happens to Henrik Lundqvist. That's what happens to Carey Price. That's what happens to Sergei Bobrovsky. These goalies aren't all of a sudden just shit when the playoffs get here.
It's what happened to Marc-Andre Fleury after the Penguins won a Stanley Cup in 2009.
Yes.
Like, it's not about the Carey Prices and the Henrik Lundqvist. It's about the fact that this happened to Marc-Andre Fleury once before, twice before, three times before, when he was younger.
It happens to every goalie because it's hard to play that many games as a goalie and be counted on and then be fresh in the playoffs. But yeah, so maybe we should change the subject before I...
Just two more quick things on Subban. Jeff P. from VGK Hockey Buzz on Twitter asked, is Gallant pulling the ultimate hashtag suck at Granger by running Fleury out there every damn night?
I would hope the decision to run an NHL franchise is not based off of a hashtag on Twitter.
Ironically enough, that was not the only message we got about hashtag Suck at Granger.
I bet.
Steven Patak at Patak Attack 30 on Steven. Twitter. He's great, right?
Yeah, fellow goalie.
Will Turk ever drop a hashtag Suck at Granger during a press conference?
I don't think Twitter knows. I mean, I don't think Gallant knows what a hashtag is.
Okay. Will he just drop a Suck at Granger at a press conference?
Let's talk about this for a second.
Okay.
What are the chances that Gerard Gallant knows what a hashtag is?
Zero.
Okay.
I mean, there is a 0% chance that Gerard Gallant, A, knows what Twitter is, and B, knows what a hashtag is.
There's no way he knows what a hashtag is. So
he asked about the Fortnite controversy, about players playing Fortnite? He's like, I have no idea what you're talking about.
So Gallant definitely doesn't know that Suck at Granger exists, so the chances of him dropping it during a press conference are none.
What if he looks at you, though, and he's just like, oh, man, this guy just needs to suck it, and he just comes up with it on his own.
Gonna
like,
happen.
What if there's just That's this kind happen. Of weird synergy between all the people that you come into contact with, and they all just look at you, and they're like, oh, suck it, Granger.
Yeah, I just don't see it happening. Although, I do enjoy, like, there are times when Gallant is genuinely angry at me. Those are not as fun. And it never lasts. Like, the next morning is fine. But, like, last night, that was fun. Like,
So Bischoff asked me which moment is the higher-ranking moment in the Granger versus Gallant archives,
saga,
right?
Man.
So is it is that what you saw, Jesse? Perfect. Or is it, ask me the question right, and I'll give you an answer. And I was like, for one, it's got to be, is that what you saw, Jesse? Perfect, because he was actually pissed off at you. Last night,
he was just busting
Not only was he busting your balls, but he actually gave you an answer.
Yeah.
Like, he gave you a legitimate goaltending answer from a guy that literally says absolutely nothing about the goalies.
Yeah, no, it was great.
So, good job. Well done, Jesse. You asked the question poorly, and you got the answer you were looking for.
Okay, but I heard you say that on the Bischoff show.
I'm kidding.
You did not. I did not ask it poorly.
I know you didn't.
I just want to clarify that you don't actually think I asked it poorly.
I knew 100% that Gerard Gallant was just giving you shit.
Yeah.
Because you didn't say Dave Pryor.
So, for those that are listening to this that don't watch the post-game show, because you're probably lost right now if you haven't seen this.
It was so good.
So after this whole goalie thing that we've been talking about for the last, 30 minutes in?
30 minutes, exactly, yep.
So I go into the press conference, and first question of the press conference, I ask Gerard Gallant, Last year, the last six back-to-backs and the first three back-to-backs of this year, you alternated the goalies. The last two, you haven't. What's changed other than the amount of hours between games?
It's a very sarcastic question. Yeah.
So then Gallant says, I didn't do anything last year. And I, to which I respond, okay, well, Dave Pryor did it. To which he responds, exactly. Now, ask the question right, and I'll give you an answer. So I grab the microphone back, start re-asking the question. I thought he was going to make me recite the entire thing again.
Yeah, I thought so too.
I start reciting it, and he stops me and goes, I'm just joking, Jesse. I'm just joking. I'll answer
it. How would that interaction have gone had this team blown a third-period lead and Marc-Andre Fleury wasn't great in the third period?
Yeah, that was my biggest worry because I had planned on asking that question from the second they were out there for pregame warmups and we found out it was going to be Fleury. I actually told Tyler Bischoff in between intermissions, I was like, man, please God let them win this game just because for my – like I don't care if the Golden Knights win or lose. Like I'm not actively rooting for them to win. In some circumstances, if it makes my life easier, I am rooting for them to win. And asking Gerard Gallant a question about playing Marc-Andre Fleury too much is significantly easier after a 4-2 win. What the hell was the score?
4-2.
Yeah, 4-2 win.
Good job.
Over if they had lost 5-1, that question would not have been nearly as much fun.
No, for sure. I was kind of, I'm not saying I was hoping for the opposite, but I was actually going to be concerned for your safety.
It would
had this game gotten away from the Golden Knights. And it got close. It got uncomfortably close there in the third period. But I would have worried for your safety because either you would have gotten the death stare or he wouldn't have answered the question.
Well, he definitely wouldn't have given me that answer.
We know we can't play him 75 and we don't intend to. He's on pace for 72. And I tweeted that out and a lot of people let me know, Tyler Bischoff included, because it's on brand, that 72 is not 75. I understand that.
Yeah.
The sentiment's the same though. Can you
imagine if Gallant plays him 74 games and then like in the last presser of the regular season just looks at me and says, "See, I told you it wasn't going to be 75."
I would love the long game troll would be awesome.
They're sitting there the 82nd game of the season, and they're like, we've played Fleury 73 games. We should probably give him a day off. And Gallant tells Pryor, no, we're going to play him 74 because I told them we weren't going to play him 75.
Does it count, though, if he gets into a game in relief of Malcolm Subban because Subban's gone 3 months without a start and gets lit up for 3 or 4 goals in the first 10 minutes of a game because he hasn't seen game action?
Yeah, I mean,
that counts.
It all.
So 74.5 is still not 74 and two-thirds?
It shouldn't be more than 60 because, like I said, two goalies in the history of the salary cap era have won a cup after playing more than 60 games. So that should tell you right there. Goalies shouldn't play 60 games.
Paul Williams at PWillUNLV tweeted at us and said, what should be the Knights' biggest concern going forward and how can/should they address it? I think we've kind of answered that through the first 3 minutes of the podcast. The biggest concern is figuring out a way to win some hockey games by playing Malcolm Subban. And I'm not suggesting that it's Malcolm Subban's fault he hasn't won a hockey game. He's been put in really tough spots. And let's be honest, the team in front of him has not shown up for him the way that they show up for Marc-Andre Fleury.
And I think more so than showing up for him the way they show up for Fleury is on the road. I think, to me, the biggest concern is on the road, this team has been awful. Their wins on the road have been against really bad teams and have or just been a spectacular performance by Marc-Andre Fleury that he shouldn't be playing that well for them to have to win. Their record at home is 10-3-1. You know how many teams in the NHL have a better home record than the Golden Knights?
The only team I can think of off the top of my head would be Tampa. Simply because they haven't lost very many games.
Tampa is the only team in the entire NHL with a better home record than the Golden Knights. So you would think, okay, you've got the second best home record. I think they're tied with Boston for the second best home record in the entire NHL. They should be easily in a playoff spot. Why are they struggling to just barely fit into that wild card right now? Because they've been so freaking bad on the road. So to me, the biggest issue is find a way to bring the energy from T-Mobile Arena away from it. And this is a great road trip to do that because I don't think any of these teams are particularly good. Columbus is good, but the other three, Devils are playing awful. Rangers are not good.
No.
Islanders are not good.
The Islanders, though, are well coached.
Of course.
And I think the Islander game and the Columbus game, so the first game and the last game of the road trip, are going to probably be difficult because Barry Trotz is a good coach.
He is.
And he's got this team playing well above expectations.
Of course. But yeah, so I think they need to find, to me, the biggest issue for the Golden Knights is playing on the road. This is a good road trip to do that. You're playing against, you don't have any studs on this road. Like, you don't have any cup contenders on this road trip. You've got four teams that you should be at least as good or better than. And they're staying in the same hotel for the three New York games. Well, the two New York and one New Jersey game. They're staying in the same hotel because everything's so close. You can just, it's a quick trip. So it's less travel. It's less stress on the body. I think this is a good road trip to get some mojo on the road. Because even though this isn't, you're not flying all over the place, if you win these four games on the road, all of a sudden the next road trip you go on where you are flying all over, you feel like, hey, we did it last road trip. We can do this. You have a little more confidence.
You also don't have a game the day after your travel. You get an extra day off tomorrow, which would be today, the day that this podcast is coming out. So that, I don't think you can kind of overlook that either. I mean, it's difficult to go across three time zones and then go out the next day with your body clock still on Pacific time and have a quality start to a game. I think that those things are difficult. And it's just difficult in and of itself to put forth the same effort every single night that you play a hockey game. These guys are human.
And you don't have the crowd behind you.
Right. Well, you're probably not going to have any crowd at Barclays, right?
Yeah. Well, at least you won't have the crowd against you.
That's a good point. So Nate Schmidt, the record with Nate Schmidt in the lineup is significantly better than the record without Nate Schmidt in the lineup. Why? Why is one man causing such an effect on this team? I mean, I know the answer. I think you know the answer. But why Nate Schmidt? How is he this important to this hockey club?
I think it's less about how good Nate Schmidt is, it's partially that, but I think it's less about that and more about Colin Miller and Shea Theodore and Braden McNabb are all now playing the roles that they're more accustomed to playing. Colin Miller is so much more comfortable playing second pairing, third pairing minutes and just focusing on the power play and scoring some goals. You've seen his scoring. He couldn't score a goal without Nate Schmidt in the lineup. He comes back in, he's scoring goals, he's creating chances. He's so much more comfortable. Braden McNabb, more comfortable having Nate Schmidt as his partner. Shea Theodore, not having to play as many minutes. I think it makes all six defensemen more comfortable in their roles when Nate Schmidt is that top lockdown guy. And I think that's the answer.
I 100% agree with you. I think it's less to do necessarily with Nate Schmidt and more to do with the fact that it balances out your lines, your defensive pairings. You've got a stay-at-home guy, you've got a puck mover, and you've got your best stay-at-home guys and your best puck movers in the lineup every single night. That's not a slight on Brad Hunt. It's not a slight on John Merrill. But when you look at the depth chart, the six guys that are in the lineup every single night are ahead of the two guys that are not in the lineup every single night. And to be honest with you, I do think that when you have asked Colin Miller for 20 games to be a shutdown defenseman, and he did it okay. He did it fine.
Yeah, no, Colin Miller stepped up and played really well. Yeah.
But the added bonus of having to do that for 20 games and then being able to kind of fall back into the rotation a little bit, your defensive game got better. Your offensive game is now going to pick up, and the net positive is only going to make that third pair stronger.
Yeah.
And when you couple that with the fact that you have a legitimate number one defenseman in Nate Schmidt that can play both of the ends of the ice extremely well, that can move the puck out of his zone efficiently and quickly.
I think that's one of the things that not enough people talk about is Nate Schmidt's puck moving quick. Just get it out of his hands to the forwards.
And that's the thing. Like, that's why the Golden Knights were so good last year. I mean, they didn't spend a ton of time in their zone defending. When they did, they ended up losing games. But if you have the ability to get the puck in, to get the puck, pick it up, turn around, and make that quick pass, then all of a sudden your transition game is going.
And you're playing in the other end.
Exactly.
Can't score if you're playing in the other team can't score on you if you're playing in the offensive end. And I know that's like a very, like, that's almost the most elementary way to look at hockey. And like when you're a kid growing up, I can remember the coach would basically say, like, look, you guys suck. Like you're not good enough to actually like score in transition. So if you get the puck, hit it to the other side of the ring.
Oh, yeah,
as long
sure.
as it's
for
over
sure.
there, yeah. you can't be scored on. But like that is true, and that's what the fourth line has done so well, is just keep it on that end of the rink and you won't give up goals.
No, for 100%. And again, it's a simplified way of looking at the game, but it doesn't make it any less true. If you can get the puck in and out of your zone quickly, and it's not just turning around and firing the puck up. Like it is under control with some type of semblance of an attack moving forward. It's controlled zone exits.
Yes.
And as long as the Golden Knights are continuing to get out of their zone quickly, efficiently, and with control and with options, then they're a good hockey team. When that ceases to exist, they're not a very good hockey team.
Yeah, and it's up to the forwards to give them options, like you said. It's a lot of times the defenseman gets blamed for not getting rid of the puck.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's easy to see him with the puck, and it's easy to see him throw that pass, and it's a turnover, and it goes back the other way, and it's a goal. And it's very easy to blame him and like, yeah, he probably shouldn't have done that. But at the same time, you have to put yourself in the shoes of that defenseman who's getting forechecked. There's a guy in his face.
Mm-hmm.
He has to make a split-second decision. And meanwhile, his three forwards are not gaining separation, are not giving him an option to throw the puck to.
Yeah.
And if he doesn't have an option, all of a sudden he now makes a poor decision because he doesn't have a good one to make.
Yeah.
And he gets all the blame. So it's not always the defenseman's. Now, when Nick Holden throws the puck straight to who was it that he threw it straight to?
Artem Anisimov.
Yeah.
Oh,
and
man.
Then he backhands it past Fleury, and then Nick Holden dives on his face and then slides face first into the boards. And then he just lays there with his face up against the corner of the boards, just thinking about how dumb he is.
I'm glad you brought that up, because I had a little bit of an argument with Frank about that play in particular. Was it a bad turnover by Nick Holden, or was it a very good play and anticipation situation by Artem Anisimov?
Horrible turnover by Nick Holden.
That's where I fall on this spectrum.
Look, a lot of people will say that if a puck gets batted out of the air, a lot of people say, oh, that's not his fault. Like, that's just an amazing play. Not really, because these guys are the best hockey players on the face of the earth.
Sure. You have to account for that.
They're going to knock the puck out of the air more times than they're going to miss it. Like, no, like, real, like, I play freaking beer league roller hockey. Guys are constantly knocking pucks out of the air. This is dudes that don't play hockey for a living.
That's just something you learn.
It's just hockey.
It's just what you do.
So the fact that NHL players are knocking pucks out of the air, that's not, oh, well, lucky play. No. If you throw that puck across the ice like that, and he's coming towards it, like, Nick Holden has to see him coming. And, like,
oh, yeah.
If he knocks out of the air, that is not a, well, I guess you just tack that up to a great play by him. Like, every player is going to knock that puck out of the air. So, yeah, that's a horrible turnover.
So, by the time this podcast comes out, Hanukkah will be over.
Yeah.
Okay. The Golden Knights are, as of right now, in a playoff spot. It is a wild card spot. It's the final wild card spot. Tonight, if the San Jose Sharks lose in regulation.
Who are they playing?
Let me look.
I don't even know.
They are playing New Jersey.
So they're probably not going to lose.
They're probably not going to lose. But it's possible. They haven't been great so far this year. But here's the deal. So if the San Jose Sharks lose tonight, the Golden Knights will move up into the third spot in the Pacific Division behind the world beaters, the Anaheim Ducks, and the top in the West, Calgary Flames. I tongue-in-cheek said that if the Golden Knights were in a playoff spot by the end of Hanukkah, they would make the playoffs. Do you think that the Golden Knights are actually going to make the playoffs?
Yes.
Okay.
I do, because I think Calgary is for real to some extent. I think mm-hmm. Calgary is a team that's going to contend for the playoffs and probably make the playoffs. I think Anaheim is going to eventually just absolutely plummet.
How the hell are they winning games?
They're winning in shootouts, and they're winning because Gibson is the best player on the ice pretty much every time they go out there. But I do think the Ducks eventually come back down to earth. So I think the Golden Knights are going to have – they're going to be the second or third best team in this division. It's going to be them and San Jose and Calgary.
Okay, hold on. This is funny. Regulation and overtime wins. Calgary has 19. Anaheim has 13. San Jose has 15. The Golden Knights have 16. The Edmonton Oilers have 15. Only the Vancouver Canucks, Arizona Coyotes, and LA Kings have less regulation and overtime wins than the Anaheim Ducks.
Yeah, I think they have what, like 6 shootout wins or something?
Yeah, probably.
Something crazy.
Also, the Anaheim Ducks are still sitting at a cool minus 13 goal differential.
Yeah, they're winning some close games. They're gutting it out. Hey, give them credit. They're playing young kids, and Gibson's playing great. That's not a good way to consistently win throughout an 82-game season. It's not a recipe for consistency. I don't expect them to be there. I expect it to be Calgary, Vegas, and San Jose in some order.
So if the playoffs were to start right now, it would be Vegas and Nashville in the first round.
Let's go. Let's go. No, and that's Nashville would have home ice, so that means we get possibly 3 trips to Nashville. I am 100% in for
that.
We
don't get anything. You get.
Okay.
I don't get.
Me and the players. I don't know. No. So I am now rooting for the Golden Knights to finish in the last wild card spot. So
final wild card spot? Okay, that makes sense. So Paul Stastny. I'm gonna preface this with a little bit. We'll probably have more information by the time this podcast actually comes out. But Reed Duke was sent down to Chicago today. There was no corresponding move to bring a player up from Chicago. So if you're reading between the lines, that would seem to suggest that Paul Stastny is very close or imminently coming off of injured reserve and will be available and ready for the Golden Knights at some point during this road trip. He is traveling on the road trip, but you would think that he'll probably be, quote, available, assuming they don't call anybody up from Chicago. So, where does Paul Stastny fit into this?
So I heard you talking about this with Tyler this morning, and I completely agree with you in that you start him on the third line because it's third line minutes. And at this point, the third line actually plays the fewest minutes. So you're actually giving him fourth line minutes. You ease him back in.
Yeah.
It's not just the time off that Stastny has had during this injury, which is, 2 months?
It's been a while.
It's also, he's only played 3 games since the Western Conference Finals last year.
Yeah.
We're talking May. He's played 3 hockey games, which is basically nothing. So his conditioning is not great. I mean, yeah, he's been skating, but that's not the same as, everybody knows, that's not the same as in-game hockey. So I think it's nice to ease him back into it, play him not as many minutes, let him get his feet back under him, and then eventually put him in that second line center spot that he belongs.
Yeah, and I think an easy way to kind of go about this is when Stastny comes back, you take a look at kind of potentially who you want him to play with, and I'm assuming at this point it's going to be either Pacioretty or Tuck, and then you take a look at the power play. And you take a look at a way in which maybe you get Paul Stastny out there with one or two of those guys, right? If you have him out there with Pacioretty, great. If you have him out there with Tuck, great. If you can find maybe ways to sprinkle in those 3 players on the power play to just start to build that momentum, to build that chemistry. And then once you're ready to go, once Cody Eakin comes back down to earth a little bit, and I don't think that Cody Eakin has played particularly badly over the last stretch of games. They just haven't been as dynamic as they were over that stretch where they were a dominant line. You're going to have to make a tough decision. Are you going to roll with Cody Eakin, or are you going to put the guy that you spent a lot of money in the offseason bringing into this organization, are you going to put him in the spot that you have designed for him, that you have envisioned for him? I don't think you do it right away, but I do think you have him third line center, you sprinkle him in on the power play, you try to work some chemistry with Pacioretty and with Tuck, and then once you feel comfortable, once you feel like you're not going to lose anything off of that second line by making the switch, you make the switch.
I could not agree more. I think that's the right way to do it. I think that's what they do.
Yeah, also. And because Cody Eakin has shown that he can play pretty much anywhere in the lineup. So I'm not worried about Cody Eakin having to go back down and play third line minutes, because he's still going to give you effective penalty killing. He's still going to be able to chip in here or there with some offense, especially if you get some chemistry with him and Tomasz Nosek, with him and
Carpenter,
Oscar Lindberg. I mean, if you can find some type of chemistry with those 4 guys, then you're set. You're golden. But, I mean, it took a long time for Carpenter to score. He finally scores a goal. Oscar Lindberg has been very good since coming back into the lineup, but it's still not anything that's jumping right out at you. Like,
I mean,
if you
had trust Oscar Lindberg.
But that's the thing, right? Like, if you had Eric Halla and Paul Stastny available to you right now, you would be sitting 2/3 of your third line or 3/4 of your fourth line or third line, and you're not even worried about it.
Yeah. I'm excited to see what the power play can do with Stastny, because their power play has essentially been one real power play unit and then just what the hell is this?
It's so...
And the what the hell is this line has scored power play goals, by the way.
Stastny on the power play, to me, is going to be that half wall player that can just slow everything down. You finally get some zone time. Like, it's great to have one or two really awesome grade A chances on a power play, but if you're not getting the puck back and you're not slowing it down in the zone and you're not spending a significant portion of those 2 minutes in the zone, you're not going to score very many power play goals. Yeah. You need more zone time in those situations, and that's why Stastny helps you out. He's so good at holding onto the puck and creating things in much the same way we saw Jason Spezza last night in against Dallas. This guy just holds on to the puck until everyone goes asleep.
And then fires a laser through like four guys' legs right off the skate of...
Ridiculous. Esa Lindell.
Yeah.
I mean, it was...
Great pass.
Phenomenal. And that's the type of stuff that Paul Stastny could do for you.
Yes. So what are these line? What are these power play units going to look like?
Oh, dude.
So do you keep the top line on one, Marchessault, Smith, and Carlson, with what, Schmidt and Theodore?
I like the idea of a net front presence on that one.
Tuck.
So I think you throw Tucky out with the top line, and then you move Pacioretty and Stastny to the second unit.
So, okay, so top power play unit is Marchessault, Carlson, Riley Smith, Tuck, and Theodore.
Yes.
Second unit is Stastny,
Reeves? No, shoot.
Well, Reeves can still be that net front.
Yeah, but if you have...
Reeves,
I would go
Miller,
Reeves,
and Schmidt.
Yeah.
They've been doing one defenseman on one unit, two defensemen on the second.
Yeah, I think until Eric Halla comes back from injury, Ryan Reeves needs to be your net front on your second power play unit. So you've got...
Gotcha.
So you've got the ability to play Ryan Reeves. I mean... You can interchange Tuck, too. Like if you want to put Reeves up there with the top line and just have him go
Ryan
to the front
Reeves,
of the net.
Number one power play.
What is it, crazy, though?
Yes.
Is it that crazy, though?
You could... Yeah. I mean, I want top line with Tuck. That's going to score a ton of goals.
Okay. So then, can you get goal scoring? Can you get legitimate production from Stastny, Pacioretty, Reeves, Miller, and Schmidt?
Yeah, I think you can, because they already are. Reeves has a couple power play goals. Carlson.
Force.
Carlson has been moved down to that second unit a couple times, and he's done well on that unit. Like, they've found ways to do it. And now, like, basically it's been they stack the top unit, and then they have one legit power play forward on the bottom unit, whether it's Tuck, whether it's Carlson, whoever. Now you're going to have two once Stastny comes back. So it only gets better.
So we're about, a month or so into the Eric Halla injury watch. When is this guy going to return? When is he coming back? We're about 1 month in without any type of update.
Yeah, I mean, I've talked to people that I'm not allowed to quote them.
Okay.
But essentially, it's not an ACL.
Okay.
I've been told it's not an ACL. Which means, because ACL means he's done for the season.
Sure.
If it was an ACL, there is no option of him coming back. He's clear. It's going to be, if he tore his ACL, it'd be, will he be okay for training camp next year?
Gotcha. Yeah.
So it's not an ACL.
Okay.
What I've been told, let me try to word this without getting myself in trouble. What I've been told is it's a long rehab process.
Okay.
And they're not sure how long it's going to take. That's why they haven't given a solid, like, we expect him to be out. Like, with Stastny, it was 2 months.
Sure.
And then it might be 2 to 3 months. But they gave a number.
Right.
With Halla, the reason they haven't is because the injury he has is a long road to recovery. Like, it's not surgery. It's not. Well, this is how long this takes to get back. He's injured.
It's
and
really
he's
just about how his body recovers to rehab
exactly.
And how he gets himself back and ready to go.
Exactly.
It's less about fixing a problem. It's more about getting himself back to where he needs to be.
The exact words I was told was, it's a long road to recovery. So I don't expect Eric Halla back anytime soon.
Do you expect him before the end of the season?
Maybe.
And if he... Okay. If it becomes apparent that Eric Halla is not going to be back before the end of the season,
trade deadline.
Will there be... I wasn't even going to go there.
I thought you were going there.
Will there be any type of update to the media, do you think? Do you think there any way possible where we will get Eric Halla is not going to be back before the end of the season?
No.
Okay.
Maybe like the day of the game, of game 82,
yes.
Gallant will be like, you guys, I'm going to come clean. Eric Halla's not playing this season.
Halla's out for the season. Okay, so you just kind of forced my hand on this one. If it's becoming apparent that Eric Halla is not going to be back by the end of the season and doubtful for the playoffs, is George McPhee going to burn an asset or two to try to bring in a player that can help this team win now?
Yeah, that's a huge question. I would not want to be George McPhee and having to make that decision, because you want to, because this team seems ready to win, right? I mean, they're playing better now. They're 8-2 in the last 10. This team, they look a lot closer to what they were last year.
Yep.
We all know you get to the playoffs, you need good goaltending. They have a good goalie, assuming he's still alive by the time we get to May. I don't know if he makes a move only because of how many assets they've burned in the last year. You look at all the stuff they've given up. You don't want to give up everything, because like that expansion draft was such a unique situation, and they got so many young assets and prospects and future picks out of that. You don't want to set all of that on fire in the first 2 years of playing, right? I mean, you do want to use some of that to your advantage.
Yeah, that's a rhetorical question. I agree.
So it's like, who do you trade? Are you going to trade one of those? Because, man, their defense down in the AHL is looking phenomenal for the future.
Sure.
Between... obviously, Eric Brandstrom and Nick Hague. Those are the two ones that everybody knows about. They're going to be studs. But White Cloud has looked really good.
Mm-hmm.
Dylan Coughlin has looked good. Zach Leslie is playing well down there. Bischoff playing well down there. The Golden Knights have, and they're all under like 23 years old.
Sure.
In the AHL, you're allowed to play six veterans, which pretty much every team plays their six veterans because they want to win.
Right. They want their young talent in big game situations.
Yeah, but the Golden Knights have convinced the Chicago Wolves to play. They're only playing three veterans a game. They're playing all young defensemen, and they're playing well.
Well, when you look at the defense for the Golden Knights, you've got Schmidt extended, you've got Miller extended, you've got McNabb extended, and you've got Theodore extended. You've got Holden for a couple of years, and this is... presumably, right, the last year of Derek Englund.
You would think.
So there's really only one spot.
You're telling me Nick Holden can't be replaced?
Oh, no, I'm telling you he can. I'm just saying that there's probably only one spot.
I think your hope...
it's Brandstrom for sure next year, right? Like, there's no question.
I'm not. I think Hague could be
no way
more ready than him.
Really?
I went to Chicago, and I got to talk to Rocky Thompson and Kelly McCrimmon for a couple days, and got to talk with the prospects for a couple days. And what I got out of that was Nick Holden is playing like – I mean, Nick Holden. What am I talking about? Nick Hague. At least I caught myself and just didn't go on talking about some thing that Nick Holden
is. Nick Holden is playing like a young whippersnapper.
Yeah. Nick Hague is playing like an NHL defenseman is supposed to. And by that, I mean he's making the simple pass.
Okay.
When I watched the game down there, the one thing that stood out to me the most as far as the defensemen go is Nick Hague almost never gets caught in a bad position. He doesn't do anything fancy. He doesn't make those plays like Brandstrom. Like, almost every time he touches the puck, you're like, holy shit, look at this kid.
It's either going to be fantastic or a disaster, and I can't turn away.
Whereas Nick Hague, it's just... the puck goes to him, it's immediately to the best decision he could have made. And that's what they want. And that's what makes me a little hesitant. I do think Brandstrom is better than Nick Hague.
Okay.
I think Brandstrom's going to be better than Nick Hague. I think when they're both at their peaks in their careers, Brandstrom is the better player.
It's Brandstrom than Hague.
Yeah. But I think the coaches watching them play and watching the decisions they make, they may think Hague is closer to being ready than Brännström. I also think because Brännström is so goddamn good, they're more careful with him because they don't want to ruin him, because I think they believe they've got a blue chip player in Erik Brännström. And if you screw that up by bringing him up too early, it's more of a crime than, say, bringing Bischoff up. And if you bring Bischoff up and screw him up, it's like, ah, that was a good prospect. We kind of ruined him by bringing him up early. Not that big a deal.
I think his appearance on Technically Correct with Tyler Bischoff ruined him.
Yeah.
Let's be honest, right?
Yeah, that was
So, yeah, I mean, I am very curious to see what this team does at the trade deadline.
Yeah.
Especially considering the fact that we have little to no idea whether or not Erik Haula is going to be a part of this team on the ice at that point in time or at any point in time between now and April.
Yeah, so. it's they're in a tough spot because they already gave up first, a second, a third for Tatar. Then you give up
Thomas.
Yeah, that's so great.
Tatar. How many goals does he have on the season?
A bunch. Like, I want to say 13.
It's more than William Karlsson.
Three more, I think.
You worried
maybe
about?
Maybe it was a three.
Are you concerned about this?
Not really.
No.
It was a three-goal lead, I think, but then Karlsson scored. It's either
I think it's two. I think it's two. Because Karlsson has, what, 11? 10?
10.
I don't know.
Whatever it is. I don't know. They're close. It's closer than it should be. I'll tell you this. If Tatar had not been traded, he would not have that many goals. I can promise you that. He'd have, like, one.
I mean, that's fair, I suppose.
But, yeah, back to the trade deadline thing. It's like, it's tough because you gave up all those picks for Tatar, then traded him and Suzuki, a first-round pick, for Pacioretty. They've given up a lot of future assets in the last year, and I don't think they want to give up Glass. I don't think they want to give up Brännström, Haig. I don't think they want to give up even, like, Lecision or Coughlin or Dugan. I don't think they want to give up any of those guys. So I don't see them making a move, just not because they don't want to make a move, because they just don't. It's just not feasible.
Sure. No, I get it. It makes sense to me. We're going to have to cut this one, I think, here. I've got a show prep for the Golden Knights Insider Show, which is on every Monday through Friday, 2 to 3 p.m. on Fox Sports 98.9 FM, 1340 AM, where I co-host with at VGK Frank on Twitter, Frank Harnish. Jesse, where can people find your stuff?
At theathletic.com.
You're decked out today.
Download
all the athletic stuff.
Look at this.
The shirts.
My swag box that they sent me.
Sweater. How quickly did you get your swag box in?
It was a couple weeks, yeah.
Really? What did they expect you to show up to the rink wearing?
I know. Come on. I need to let people know what's up. But so yeah, go to athletic.com. Download the app. If you subscribe to The Athletic, you're paying the money, and you don't have the app, what are you doing with
your
life?
You're doing it wrong, for sure.
The app is so awesome because it's super easy to, like, pick which teams you want to follow, so you see only the stories you want. And then when a new story gets posted, it sends you a little notification saying it's, like, the best thing ever. Yeah, you definitely want – if you are a subscriber, which you should be because it's awesome, you
sure
should have the app. Today, which will now be yesterday when this comes out, we did every market in North America – did a sports person of the year. Like Ovechkin.
Exciting.
Was named sports person of the year in Washington, D.C. Not surprising.
I mean, it probably could have gone with Evgeny Kuznetsov, but that's just me. Well,
it's freaking Ovi.
It's Kuzi.
Anyways, in
hell,
Vegas,
you could have gone with Devontae Smith-Pelly, for Christ's sake.
Well, yeah, but and remember, this is all sports, not just hockey. This is all sports. So, like, they could have went with, like,
Holtby. Okay, is there anything Ovechkin else happening in Washington, D.C. sports?
I mean,
this year?
Bryce Harper is a big deal, right? He may be leaving there, though. Anyways, for Vegas, my choice was Bill Foley, Golden Knights owner. More so for what he's done for the city than it is even the Golden Knights. My story is saying him deciding to be the first one and make that gamble and make that leap into Vegas is what led the Raiders, the Las Vegas Aces WNBA team, the Las Vegas Lights FC soccer team. It got the 51s a new stadium out in Summerlin next to their practice league. I think the
What team was that?
Explode, huh?
What team was that? You said the 51s.
Yeah, the Aviators now.
Who's
the Aviators?
I don't know who that is.
So this sports explosion we've seen in Las Vegas, I think Bill Foley deserves a ton of credit for it.
Had the Golden Knights won the Stanley Cup and Marc-Andre Fleury posted, I don't know, like a 1.50 goals against average and a .936, .937 save percentage in the final, would he have been your sports person of the year?
Probably. It's tough. Like it's a fundamental, like, it's, you have to decide whether you want to go pure what happened on the ice, field, rink, court, whatever you want to say, or off the ice. And I think what's happening in Las Vegas is right now, and like for us as sports journalists, like in this city, that's fantastic. Like,
no, I agree with your selection. I think you're
fantastic.
Absolutely right.
Yeah,
100%.
Yeah, so go read my story about how awesome Bill Foley is.
I don't know. I don't have my phone right in front of me, but I do know that somebody on Twitter did ask today, how has the Athletic changed Jesse Granger? You were pretentious, and now how much of a jerk are you now that you write for the Athletic? Who? What company is that, by the way? Who do you write for?
Are they part-time?
Is it part-time?
Oh, so you can find me on theathletic.com, or make sure you subscribe to Rink Rats on iTunes, because I'm hoping we get more than two listeners for this. That way we can top the Vegas take.
I was wondering where you were going with that, because I'm like, I know we get more than two listeners. I was actually looking at the numbers the other day, and I wouldn't have any problem putting that on Twitter either. So, all right, that's going to do it for us. Thank you so much for listening. I know it's been a while, but I think with Jesse's schedule this month, we're going to be able to churn out a couple more episodes before the end of the year, and then we'll figure out a way to get this jet setter down to some committed times throughout the week to do some podcasts so we can keep this ball rolling. Again, thank you for subscribing on iTunes to Rink Rats. If you haven't done so already, go to iTunes or any place that you get your podcast fix and download, subscribe, leave a 5-star comment for the Rink Rats. We would appreciate it. Don't forget to follow me at Ryan Hockey Guy on Twitter. He is at Jesse Granger _ on Twitter. You can chirp him. You can tell him about how stupid he is, that he thinks Marc-Andre Fleury is playing too much just because Marc-Andre Fleury had a good game. Really, you can run the whole gamut of interactions with us on Twitter, on our social media. Thanks again for listening, and we'll be back with you next week.